This is Julie at Dogcast Radio. If you like dogs, wherever you are in the world, we're the show for you. Hello and welcome to episode 12 of Dogcast Radio. Before we get started, we have a new subscribe by email feature on our website. If you go to our homepage, you'll find a subscribe by email button. If you enter your email address, each time there's a new Dogcast episode, you'll be sent an email with information about the episode and a link to the episode itself. Also on our website, the breed profiles are a growing feature. And we'd love to have pictures of your dogs and your comments about the breeds you live with. Whether you have a pedigree or a crossbreed, have a look at the breed profiles and send us a photo of your dog. In this episode, we talk to Susan Grew, a listener with three dogs of her own, who does a lot of work rehoming dogs.
Mostly when you will see a one-year-old Labrador in the shelter as they've grown older and they're bigger, but they still haven't outgrown their puppiness.
Susan shares her home with a very special rescue dog that we'll be finding more out about later. In Puppy Playtime, we find out about Dogs Trust sponsor dogs.
Leo is your typical lurcher. He's a big goof, really. He's very playful.
Plus, we have a profile of a breed that's often in need of a second chance and a second home. The athletic-looking, but actually laid-back, greyhound.
You know, we find once people have met one, they're quite keen to have one.
Coming up soon, we have Gwen Bailey's advice on some of the things to consider before you take on a rescue dog. But first, a special edition of Dogcast Radio News.
Hello. In this programme, we are looking at the issue of rescue dogs.
It's the time of year when puppies or dogs unlucky enough to be given as Christmas presents begin to find themselves ejected from the homes as the novelty is worn off. The more fortunate ones are taken into shelters. Detailed statistics are hard to establish, but the reality is that every year millions of dogs enter shelters, and a shockingly small proportion of dogs actually spend their life in their first home. Although there is a big movement in animal shelters towards a no-kill policy, meaning that no healthy animal will be put to sleep, there are still far too many dogs who are euthanized simply because no one wants them.
There are many reasons for a dog to find itself in a shelter. Divorce, change in lifestyle, lack of time for the dog, the dog has hit its challenging teenage months, the dog has grown too large, the family is moving home to somewhere where the dog is not permitted, the dog is part of an unplanned litter with no home to go to, or injury or illness of the dog.
The best way to reduce the number of dogs in shelters is if everyone who takes on a dog, rescue or otherwise, thinks all the issues through and makes a commitment for the life of the dog. Regrettably, a high proportion of dogs who are rescued from shelters find themselves rejected again within a year. Taking on a rescue dog can involve challenges, although it can be immensely fulfilling, as we will hear later on in the programme.
There are other steps we can take to make our contribution to improve the situation. If we don't breed from our dogs, they won't produce offspring to add to the overpopulation problem, and neutering our pets will have the same positive effect. If your heart is set on a particular breed, it may well be worth investigating a breed-specific rescue organisation. Once we have committed to a dog, we must put the effort in to train them. We all know how trying the teenage months of a dog life can be, and this is a period when many dogs find themselves in rescue.
Even if you can't take on a rescue dog of your own, whether it's because you already have a dog or dogs, or the time isn't right for you yet, there are still many ways you can help, as we will be investigating during this programme. We'll be back later with some more food for thought on the subject of rescue.
Taking on any dog is a huge commitment, and there are many issues to think through. Here, author and dog trainer Gwen Bailey gives her expert advice as to what to consider before adopting a rescue dog.
Okay, well, I think the most important thing is to sit down with the family and before you ever get to a rescue centre and think about the kind of dog that might suit you as a family. So you need to make decisions about not only about what kind of coat the dog has, for example, and what sort of size it's going to be, but also what kind of personality you want. So how active is the dog going to be? How much do you need it to be happy with being cuddled, for example? how much petting are you going to do, and how much, you know, are you going to spend a lot of time running with it and taking it out and throwing balls, or are you going to be quite a sort of cuddly family and want to hug it all the time and do that kind of thing, or do you want a dog that just lays on the sofa and looks pretty and doesn't really want too much interference? So you need to think about those things. You also need to think about how much you're going to leave it alone and whether it's going to be able to cope with that. So you need, you know, if you're going to be out for quite a good part of the day, you need to think about how it's going to cope and whether it's going to be okay and what sort of age it is, because obviously older dogs will be more able to cope with laying down for a lot of the time than for young dogs, for example. You need to think about how boisterous the dog is going to be and whether that's going to suit you if you've got young children or elderly people living in the household. You need to think about your other pets, whether you've got cats or rabbits, a dog coming into your household is going to be safe with them. And then you need to think about where you're going to walk it and all those kind of things. So really sort of have a good think about what sort of dog is going to be the right kind of personality for you. Do you want an outgoing personality or do you want a little shy one? Some people, the good thing is that lots of people, everybody wants different things in a dog. And so the trick really, the secret really to getting a good dog that's going to be very suitable for your family is to actually think about what you want and then go and find it. So that you're not getting a surprise and you're not choosing, when you enter, you're not choosing on looks alone. A dog that looks like previous dogs you've had or dogs you've had in your childhood, in a film, or dogs that you know in some way, or white fluffy dogs that look sweet. So it's very tempting to go on looks alone, and if you do that, the chances are you won't get exactly the right dog for you.
No.
My advice really is to sit down before you even get anywhere near a rescue dog and think about what's going to be good for you in terms of personality, how it's going to live, how you're going to treat it, who it's going to come across, how sociable it's going to be, and all those kind of things. So that when you go to the rescue centre, you're already armed with a list of things that are going to be good for you.
Okay, great. I was just thinking as I was listening to that someone that my daughter used to go to school with, they went and rescued, they wanted a Cocker Spaniel.
Yes.
And they went and rescued a Cocker Spaniel. And I remember this dog went to live with them, and they took it back the next morning because it cried all night.
Oh, yes.
And you just think, what did you expect?
I think the other thing is that people think that adult dogs will be perfect because they don't get a puppy because they don't want to raise it and go all through the hassle of having house training and chewing problems. And so they think that adult dogs are going to be perfect because they're adults. But, of course, a lot of those dogs have gone into rescue because they are quite untrained and nobody has bothered to educate them. So you will have to consider, if you're going to get a rescue dog, you will have to consider the fact that, you know, a lot of the work you do is going to be just bringing up the dog and educating it. If you get an 18-month-old dog, don't expect it to know things that you want it to know. Do you have to go through a period of training and behaviour education when you get the dog home? So they need to be prepared for that.
Gwen's written a book called The Rescue Dog, and if you'd like to find out more, there's a link on our site. And now, 2-Minute Fiction. Doggedness by Julie Hill. I have just got back from the doctors with anti-inflammatory tablets and a diagnosis of tennis elbow. Do I play tennis? No. So how did I become afflicted? I'll tell you how it all began. I'd thought about getting a dog for ages, and I realised when I got the opportunity to do most of my work from home that the time was right. I did some research into breeds and was really attracted to Border Collies. The breed comes with some serious warnings about the amount of exercise and amusing they need, which I took account of. However, I'm an active person, plus a dog that would take to a variety of training activities would be great, and I had every faith I could keep such an energetic, clever dog content. Rather than go through the hard work of a puppy, I wanted a slightly older dog. I visited my local dog shelter, and it wasn't long before I met Beth, a beautiful but forlorn Border Collie. She was almost 2, and had ended up in rescue as her owners couldn't keep up with her drive to be busy. She was so sweet-natured, though, resting her head in my hand, gazing up at me. After the necessary paperwork and home checks, Beth came to live with me, and it was great. I gave her time to settle in, get used to me and her new home, but she was very quickly right at home. She did love her exercise, but she'd had basic training, and so I could give her lots of free running, as I knew she would come back when I called. At times, though, she would pick up one of her toys, drop it at my feet, then sit and stare at me. It was abundantly clear she wanted to play fetch, which wasn't always possible, as I did have to get some work done. I considered matters, and decided that the time had probably arrived to extend Beth's training. We started on a basic obedience course, but soon progressed to intermediate, and Beth loved it. She was so eager and switched on, and for a while, it was great. Then she started plaguing me for more fetching games, so I enrolled in flyball classes. Border collies excel at this canine sport, involving speed and accuracy in retrieving tennis balls and jumping over hurdles, and Beth was no exception. However, she still seemed to have energy to burn. I was not beaten yet, though. If retrieving was what she wanted, that was what she would get. So on some of the days between our classes, I threw tennis balls in the park for her. The problem with this was that no matter how far I threw the ball, she was on it like a shot, and within seconds it was back at my feet, and she was sitting regarding me intently, waiting for the next throw. I hit on what I thought was a good idea of taking a tennis racket, with which I could serve the balls a really satisfactory distance. Beth was happy, and I was happy. Gradually, she built her fitness levels up. She just couldn't get enough, training, walking, running, or fetching. Over the months, the sessions in the park, with me serving the tennis ball as far as I could, became a daily occurrence, and there I'd be every day for at least 20 minutes, serve after serve. Beth was happy, though, as I'd been set on her being, but the muscles in my arm began protesting, which brings me to today, and my diagnosis of tennis elbow. "Rest the arm. Stop playing tennis for a while," my doctor advises. Now, how can I do that with an energetic collie to amuse? I think my neighbours will object if I keep a flock of sheep in the garden. Maybe golf. Does tennis elbow stop you getting a good golf swing going? Oh, we'll sort it out somehow. I'm determined. You're listening to Dogcast Radio on www.dogcastradio.com. Dogcast listener Susan Grew shares her house with three dogs. Bo, a black Labrador, Roxy, who's an Australian Shepherd, and Frank, who's a German Shepherd dog. Frank is a very special rescue dog. He is absolutely beautiful, and if you'd like to see him, there's a picture of this very handsome dog on our website. I'll let Susan tell you why he is so special.
How I first got involved with rescue is I had, we started out with our yellow Labrador, Max, and then adopted, or got Bo, our current black lab, from a breeder. We got both of them from breeders, and as I'm sure you know and everyone knows, you get a breed and you just love them and you want to learn more about them. And I knew about shelters. My family, when I was growing up, we had two shelter dogs. So I was aware, of course, about adopting homeless animals, but I really wasn't aware about breed rescue groups until I started delving more into the Labrador breed, and then just found out how many Labradors really do end up in shelters every year, and that there was a strong breed rescue movement for Labradors. So I got involved through that, just learning.
It amazes me because labs are such a nice, I mean, all dogs are nice, but labs are so loving and tolerant, and they just want to love you and be with you, you know, and it just, I can't understand how labs can be unwanted.
Oh, I know, and there's, and I was just, and you said, as you said on your latest program, that, you know, you were doing the news and you did the study on the most popular breed, and Labradors are the most popular breed here in the States, and I know, and which is so good, but it also, you know, makes my heart stop, because I know the more popular they are, then the more that do end up in shelters. Mm. And I think, and maybe if you can remember when Buddy was little, but I know too, I think lab owners a lot of times need a support group for their first year owning a lab, because they are so active as puppies. Mm. And that's mostly when you will see a one-year-old Labrador in the shelter, as they've grown older and they're bigger, but they still haven't outgrown their puppiness. People just didn't realize what they were getting into, I think, and then just don't have quite the patience to wait out the rest of the puppy, the maturing process. I think that's the most common thing that you'll see is about a one-year-old Labrador, 14-month-old Labrador that end up in the shelters or looking for home.
It always makes me sad then because, okay, the puppyhood, you know, that when they're very little, that's hard work, you know, and the toilet training and all that. But it's also they're the really cute stage and they're fun and they're, you know, and it saddens me when people get, you know, the good and the bad, but the good of the puppyhood and then just discard them.
Yes, I know, exactly. And they're just, you just see it on their faces, too, when they're in the shelter or we take them into foster. Or what, you just, the look on their face, they're confused, they don't understand, and they're just, you know, they just so want to love and they just need their family. So.
They do, don't they? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
They bond so well. They just want to be with you.
They do. I know.
So, tell me about Frank.
Frank, it's kind of a roundabout story, but I'll try and be quick,
okay.
As quick as I can. My husband had always mentioned having a German Shepherd, but throughout our years of marriage, we've always had at least two or three dogs, so our house has always been full. One rainy day about 2.5 years ago, we heard some bad news about a neighbor who had been walking her German Shepherd across a busy street in our neighborhood to get to the park, and a place where I walk my dog, right where I walk my dogs almost every day, and she had gotten hit by a car and killed with her dog, who happened to be a German Shepherd. And of course we were very sad about the neighbor, but both my husband and I, first or second reaction was, oh my gosh, what happened to the dog?
Yeah, yeah.
And in the space of time it took for us to find out that the dog was humanely euthanized due to his injuries, I think it was a couple of hours. And in that space of time, both my husband and I had independently of each other decided we were going to take that dog. So we had just as well had a German Shepherd in our house right in the space of those few hours. Then having found out that you know, he was euthanized as he should have been due to his injuries, we just couldn't get the idea of a German Shepherd out of our head. And so actually, unbeknownst to me, it was my husband that went on the German Shepherd Rescue website, and Frank's picture was prominently displayed there as being kind of the case of the month. And what had happened is he was taken to the shelter by animal control after being picked up, apparently, and this is my understanding, so I have heard this third hand, but it was quite clearly told to me. He was playing in the street with his children of the family who owned him, and he got hit by a car in the process of trying to shield the children from being hit. So they made it to safety. He did not, and was struck and had a what appeared to be a broken leg. For whatever reason, the family, instead of calling the vet, called the animal control to come and pick up Frank. And they said they didn't want him, and animal control offered to euthanize him, but they didn't want to pay the $35 fee. And so as a result, happily for us, but it caused Frank a lot of pain. He was taken back to the shelter and spent about 10 days sitting in the shelter with a open wound and a broken leg. So thank goodness German Shepherd Rescue of Los Angeles rescued him. And actually the lady that rescued him, her name is Sean, and she's called Last Chance Sean because she takes the animals that no one else wants. And I have to tell you, working in lab rescue, we would have cases like this of a really sick dog, and my reaction would be, there's always the debate, well, gosh, do we spend all the group's resources rescuing this one dog, or do we take all of those resources and we can rescue five healthy dogs? I used to err more on the side of rescuing maybe more dogs instead of tying up all our resources with a sicker animal. I have clearly changed my mind now, and I am so glad that Sean was last chance Sean and picked up our darling Frank. So he had to be carried to the car. He's a very large dog, as you can see in the picture. And he was, but we were able, people were able to just carry him because he was so thin and so sick. And German Shepherd Rescue spent a lot of money trying to save his leg because they felt like, you know, they just wanted to do everything they could for this wonderful dog. And in the end, his leg could not be saved, and which has turned out to be just fine. He's just a wonderful dog, and when I walk him down the street, you know, people will stop the car, their cars a lot, or being pulled over and say, "Oh, poor dog," and he's the happiest dog that I've ever seen, and he just doesn't notice almost from the time that we brought him home from the vet after having his operation. He picked up a tennis ball in the backyard that first night and was ready to go. And I thought, oh my gosh, after all he'd been through. And anyway, so he hasn't missed a beat, I'll tell you that.
Oh, he looks wonderful, really gorgeous.
Thank you.
Well, I'm really glad for him that he's found, you know, a good home with you.
Oh, thank you. We feel honored to have him. And as I said, I mentioned I'm silly on him. And part of the things I have to admit, and I have to confess, we live in Orange County, California, which is just south of Los Angeles, so right near Hollywood. And it has crossed my mind. I think he is just such a fantastic dog. I thought, oh, he needs to be in the movie. So anyway, I would not do that. He's happy where he is.
Yeah,
but that's how gone I am on him. I think silly thoughts like that. Anyway.
Well, we'll put him on our website, and hopefully, you know, a lot of people will see him.
Okay, who knows? An agent. We'll take any calls from agents.
Yes.
That's fine.
I'll put a note on.
Thank you.
Oh, that's wonderful. That's a lovely story, because I think sometimes the dogs in shelters that would get overlooked and sort of think, oh no, he's not a perfect dog, or he's missing a leg, or, you know, anything like that. And they might get overlooked. I think it's good to get stories like this out.
Good. I'm so glad. And you're right. I can't emphasize enough. He's just, and actually people thank me and thank us. Oh, thank you for saving this dog. And it must be, and I feel a little guilty because he's just such a wonderful dog. Is absolutely, no, there's no extra work involved. He's healthy. He's happy. Yes, I can't. And, actually, another part to this, too, is that the vet has actually had other clients of his call me when they've had to face having some amputations done on their dogs due to cancer, things like something like that. And Frank has kind of become the poster boy for dogs being okay after having amputations. So. He taught me the lesson that that sick dogs are really worth saving. When I knew that, but it really brought that home to me, and he's doing that for other dogs as well now. So I'm very glad for that.
Yeah. And you're off tomorrow, is it, to help with Hurricane Katrina aftermath?
Yes, I am. I went in September to help out right after the hurricane, and I worked in a staging area a few miles away from New Orleans, where the animal control or the rescuers that were in the city would bring the dogs from the city out to the staging area. It was the fairgrounds, and they had barns where the animals were being kept. And then I helped to take care of the animals right there at the staging area. So we're looking forward to going back again. It was the kind of thing where it was such an incredibly sad experience. So I'm interested to see how it will be this coming weekend. So, because they're still dogs that are, they're feeding some of the stray dogs that are there that have been left homeless and that they can't quite catch, and then there's dogs that are still waiting to be adopted that were victims of the storm.
Mm. And is any of the work involved, well, I mean, presumably it is, but how much of the work involved is tracing the actual owners of the dogs that they, you know, they had to leave behind?
That's a very good question. There is a massive internet movement where dogs are being placed on one of the websites is petfinder.com, and records are trying to be kept as dogs came in right after the storm and even now. And there are people working from their homes trying to make the connections between the owners and the dogs. So just there's so much love and effort and time being spent in homes just all over that I think the capacity of which I don't think anyone really knows. So I just think for all of those people that are spending all that time and energy doing it, it's just a monumental task, and I'm so grateful to them, and I'm sure the owners and the animals themselves also feel very glad that they're doing that work. So.
That was, I mean, as I said in the email, you know, the whole thing was just heartbreaking. But particularly seeing those dogs just, you know, having to be left and them, you know, being turned down places in boats and things, that was just heartbreaking. So they haven't got a clue what's going on.
No. And that's always been my worst fear. I've been trained in an emergency animal rescue just for this kind of situation where I've always worried that I've had to leave my dogs, you know, in the case of an emergency, or I've been gone somewhere and not been able to get back to get my dogs. And just knowing, and I mean, that's got to be every pet owner's one of their worst fears. And so to see that being played out over and over and over again, I know it was heartbreaking for all of us.
Well, best of luck with that work.
Well, thank you very much.
I think you could tell from that interview that Susan is a wonderful lady who loves her dogs and gets a lot from them and puts a lot back by helping with homeless dogs. And I wish her the best of luck with her work and her own dogs. If you aren't in a position to take on a rescue dog, what can you do? I talked to Shauna Steadman from Dogs Trust Evesham Centre about some of the alternatives.
Some people aren't in a position to come down and adopt a dog themselves. So we do invite people down. One of the ways they can help us here at Dogs Trust is dog walking. We're crying out all the time for dog walkers. It's a way of dogs getting out of the kennel more than twice a day. It's good for their socialisation, and it's good for them to see other people other than their carers. We also do puppy socialising classes where we ask people to come and spend some time in the puppy palace, we call it. Basically gives puppy more interaction with humans, with children, toys, and it just gives them a really good start in life. Another thing people can do to help is sponsor a dog. We have two dogs here at Evesham. One's Leo and one's Ginger. Oh no, one's Leo and one's Charlie. Ginger's now retired, bless him. And people can sponsor them for £1 a week, and they can come down and visit their sponsor dogs. We also have events like Open Day, which is our biggest event of the year, and we have a massive fete out in our field, and we hold stalls, dog shows, things like that. So we ask people to come down, get involved, make cakes, you know, prizes, things like that. So there's all stuff like that going on. Also, we run the Home from Home scheme, which is a scheme where we ask people if they're in a position to take a dog into their home. It's only for a short period because some dogs here don't do well in kennels. One dog I can think of was Murray. He was a young collie. He's very good with other dogs, very good with people, but he lost a lot of weight in kennels. He was stressing, and we just couldn't keep the weight on him, and he was going downhill. So we thought, he's got to get the best chance possible. So the only way we could do that was get him into a home environment, get him on his feet, and in that way we sent people out to the home to see him, saw him at his best, and he's now in a loving home. So there are lots of ways that you can come down and help us. I mean, especially dog walking, I mean, it's a good way of keeping fit as well. So we ask people, you know, exercise classes, well, why not come down here and walk
Absolutely.
The dogs? So
give the gym a miss.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, a lot of people, I mean, some people feel that they're too old to have a dog. We never push a dog on anybody. And people miss their old dogs, you know, dogs have died or whatever. So we do say, you know, come down, meet the dogs and take them out for walks. Even if they would just want to sit on the bench for, you know, 10 minutes with them. It's 10 minutes out the kennel for a dog here, so.
I think the very strong message there was if you want to help, go down to your local shelter and ask what help they need. The dogs will get a lot out of it, and so will you.
And now, for our younger listeners, it's Peppy Playtime! Hi, and welcome to Peppy Playtime. I wanted to help a rescue dog, so I decided to become a dog sponsor. I chose to sponsor Leo, who lives in Dogs Trust Evesham Centre. I went to the centre and talked to Sean Steadman, and I asked, why do Dogs Trust have sponsor dogs?
We have sponsor dogs here at Evesham. All over our Dogs Trust centres have sponsor dogs. And these are particular dogs that we can't rehome and that will never go out to homes. We have three sponsor dogs here. And they have been into homes before, but it hasn't been successful and it hasn't worked out for them due to maybe behavioural problems, something like that. The dog always has to be very happy in kennels for us to choose them as sponsor dogs, so they have to be happy with living here. Also, they get treated a little bit different to the other dogs because they're going to be here for the rest of their lives. They get people taking them out more. They have a lot more enrichment in their kennels, such as maybe an armchair or things like that. So, but they're very happy in kennels, and that's why they're chosen as sponsor dogs.
I wanted to find out about Leo's character.
Well, Leo is your typical lurcher. He's a big goof, really. He's very playful. He's happy to see you. If you just poke your head around his kennel, a big smile comes up on his face. He loves his toys and especially loves his blankets. You'll see him on a quiet day curling up on his blankets. He's a very homely dog. But he's lots and lots of fun. He's a brilliant dog.
I was interested in what Leo's typical day was like.
Leo's day, well, he wakes up fairly early, around about 8 o'clock, and he has his breakfast. He loves his breakfast. He's very keen on his food. And after his breakfast, he'll go out and do his business. and then he'll go into the paddock for a little run around to start the day waking up. And then he may have some visitors throughout the day. He has got a diary, as you probably know, as you've been to visit him. So then he'll meet all his visitors throughout the day, and they quite often bring him presents. And then in the evening, he'll settle down with his tea and a blanket, and then he'll go to bed ready for the next day.
Buddy loves his toys, so I wondered if Leo had a favourite toy.
Anything that squeaks, I think, but it doesn't squeak for long. He gets very spoiled at Christmas as well, so his favourite time of the year is definitely Christmas. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
After we talked, I got to spend some time with Leo, and he is lovely. He is very tall, but very gentle. He loves being stroked and made a fuss of, and wants to be the centre of attention. If we weren't giving him enough attention, he reminded us with a pat of his front paw. Leo is a very sweet dog, and I enjoy knowing that I am helping to keep him happily homed at Dogs Trust. There are lots of rescue organisations helping dogs, and many ways in which you can support them. On our website, there are links to various organisations where you will find a variety of ideas to help homeless dogs. So have fun with your dogs, make sure your dog has fun with you, and let's help homeless dogs have fun too.
Heather Hawkins works with the Retired Greyhound Trust and has helped to rehome many dogs. She herself shares her house with her rescue greyhound, Tiger. She tells us about this delightful laid-back breed and the work of the Retired Greyhound Trust.
Right. When we get them, as when they come to the trust, they're more or less days off the track. They've just finished racing. So they know nothing about home life at all. They've been sort of past pillar to post. So you don't really know the temperament at all till you actually meet the dog. But we find within a day or two, they conform to the usual, very lazy, very sleepy, very cuddly, and a perfect house dog. They don't rush about by nature. They sort of sleep a lot, a 10-minute gallop, and they're absolutely exhausted. So 99% of them conform quite well to that sort of format. So mm-hmm. We find them quite easy to rehome. We do a lot of work to try and get them in tones. We take them around garden centres. My dog particularly is quite a good charity worker. Mm. So we end up with sort of five or six greyhounds in a completely strange place, like a garden centre. And you have people coming, children climbing all over them, cuddling them. And they just respond by sort of laying on the floor, sort of looking up, going, mind my feet. They don't jump up, they don't lick, and a lot of people are genuinely quite surprised because they expect these big dogs to be big and bouncy and aggressive. And they're actually completely the opposite. So we rehome quite a lot, having people meet them at these road shows that we do.
Mm.
We find once people have met one, they're quite keen to have one. I had a friend who got a greyhound, and my husband isn't a doggy person at all, but having met my friend's greyhound and seeing how quiet and unassuming they are, I've ended up with Tiger, and he's a super dog. He's very gentle, a real gentleman, and I couldn't imagine life without him now.
Mm.
But they're very placid, easy dogs.
Mm. When you say that they're placid and easygoing, are they affectionate as well? Do they get enthusiastic?
Very affectionate. We try to discourage owners from letting them jump up because they're big dogs. So, if you just sort of step away, they don't jump up. But they are gentle, but in a very low-key way. They sort of come up to you and they sort of lean against you and you sort of stroke them. They're not bouncy, licky dogs. There's different kinds of affection. Some people think, a dog licking your face is affectionate, whereas I don't really quite like that.
Mm.
So having a dog just come up to you and let them stroke, so you can stroke them and cuddle them. I sit for hours on the floor just stroking Tiger's feet, and he just loves it.
Mm.
And it's very sort of low-key, and especially when you've got children in the house, you don't want a big bouncy dog knocking them over every 5 minutes.
No.
So, Tiger's been used to my little girl from, I brought her home from hospital and he sort of opened one eye, looked at her, went, oh, God, and went back to sleep. And he's sort of been like that ever since, really.
Mm.
I've had no trouble with him, being jealous or possessive because they're not lap dogs. They're not like a little spaniel that's sat on your lap that's been ousted. They are floor dogs, so whatever you do, as long as you don't trip over them, they'll stay quite happily on the floor, just watching you come and go.
Do they tend to bond with one person, or do they love the whole family?
They're quite like one person. Tiger would follow me to the ends of the earth, and, my husband was to walk away and call him. He'd sort of look over his shoulder and go, I don't think so. But if I'm at work, he'll quite happily go with my husband for a walk. It's the next best option.
Mm.
But, he adores my daughter because she gives him her empty yogurt pots, and if she's finished a biscuit, and she knows where to steal the bonio for. So, on a day-to-day basis, he will bond to every member of the family.
Yeah.
But, if he was on a bit of elastic, it would be tied to the back of my legs, I have to say.
Yeah. What about the other big question that people think about with greyhounds is exercise? Yeah. What about that?
It's quite the opposite. If you see them on the track, it's sort of a 2-3 minute race, and then that's it, then done. So all we say to people is if you can give them a walk in the morning, 20 minutes, that's the maximum, and then they'll sleep most of the day, and then, it's nice for the dog if it has another sort of 15, 20 minute walk. Sort of after its tea, and that's all you need to do. They don't want to walk for an hour and a half. They don't want to go miles and miles and miles. It's not really their thing, so which makes them the ideal dog for the more mature owner because they've been walked. The kennel girls walk them six at a time. They're very good on a lead. They don't pull. So you could quite happily, my father's in his mid-70s and he ambles around the block with him and Tiger's as good as gold. So, they don't need a lot. Were you to take them for a big walk, the greyhound has to organise walks and we're out for an hour. They can do that, but don't expect to see them till tea time. He creeps away on his bed. and that's about it. You definitely don't get any trouble from them if you do take them for a long walk.
Yeah.
Not so good at climbing over stiles and gates and fences. They're a bit like a daddy long legs. They don't quite know where to put the legs. But, And you know, they'll take whatever you give them. And, you know, if a certain day and it's pouring down with rain, believe me, they don't want to go out either. So you haven't got to feel. You've got to drag them around the block and get drenched to the skin because they're not really that bothered.
Yeah. And do they, what about training? Do they sort of take to that?
There's certain things. Most greyhounds can't physically sit down compared to dog training. And because of the length of the spine and the thighs, they actually find it incredibly difficult to sit. Either stood up or they lay down, and that's it, really. But they respond really well to food. So with Tiger, I just used to keep treats in my pocket. Tiger come, Tiger in the car, you throw a treat in the car. And they learn so quickly. I was absolutely amazed how quickly, you know, he learned. He always has his biscuits on his bed, so I put Tiger on his bed, and he goes on his bed, and Tiger in the car, and he jumps up. And they're actually quite good. You're probably not really the agility training kind of dog. I can't quite see that with them. But, you know, the stay and all that sort of stuff and the weight, you know, they do learn quite quickly. I think they know when they're onto a good thing. They don't want to go back to the kennel, so they tend to catch on very quickly. Mm.
There's a link on our website to the Retired Greyhound Trust's website. And the greyhound is a lovely breed. And I'm sure if you're interested in one, there will be a rescue society near you.
And finally, if you'd like to start supporting animal shelters or even considering adopting a rescue dog, let this story be an inspiration. If you already support rescue, accept this story as an encouragement. You are probably aware of Rainbow Bridge and the idea that when a dog dies, he waits just this side of heaven until the happy day that he and his person are reunited, when they pass over together. We came across this version of the story and hope you enjoy it. Unfortunately, we cannot credit it to anyone, as its author is unknown.
Rescue at Rainbow Bridge. Unlike most of the sun-filled days at the Rainbow Bridge, this particular day dawned cold and grey, damp as a swamp, and as dismal as any day could be imagined. All of the recent arrivals had no idea what to think, as they had never experienced a day like this before. But the animals who had been waiting for their beloved people knew exactly what was going on and started to gather at the pathway leading to the bridge to watch. It wasn't very long before an elderly animal came into view. His head hung low, so very low, and his tail dragging. The other animals, the ones who had been there for a while, knew what his story was right away, for they had seen this happen far, far too often. He approached slowly, very slowly, and was obviously in great emotional pain, but with no sign of injury or illness. Unlike all of the other animals waiting at the bridge, this animal had not been restored to youth and made healthy and vigorous again. As he walked towards the bridge, he watched all of the other animals watching him. He knew he was out of place here, and the sooner he could cross over, the happier he would be. But alas, it was not to be. As he approached the bridge, his way was barred by the appearance of an angel, who sadly apologized to him and then told him that he would not be able to pass. Only those animals who were with their people could pass over to the Rainbow Bridge. With no place else to turn to, the elderly animal turned towards the fields before the bridge and saw a group of other animals like himself, also elderly and infirm. They weren't playing, but rather simply lying in the green grass, forlornly staring out at the pathway leading to the bridge. And so he took his place among them, watching the pathway, and waited. One of the newest arrivals at the bridge didn't understand what he had just witnessed, and asked one of the animals that had been there for a while to explain it to him. "You see that poor animal over there, with the others? They are rescues. He was turned into a rescue just as you see him now, an older animal with his fur greying and his eyes clouding. Sadly, he never made it out of rescue, and he passed on with only the love of his rescuer to comfort him as he left his earthly existence. Because he had no family to give his love to, he has no one to escort him across the bridge." The first animal thought about this for a minute and then asked, "So what will happen now?" As he was about to receive his answer, suddenly the clouds parted swiftly and the gloom lifted with an almighty wind. Approaching the bridge could be seen a single person, and among the older animals, a whole group was suddenly bathed in a golden light, and they were all once again young and healthy, just as they were in the prime of their life. "Watch and see," said the second animal. A second group of animals, from those also waiting, came to the pathway and bowed their heads ever so low as the person neared closer. As each bowed head was offered, the person patted their head, scratched behind their ears, and one by one the newly restored animals fell into line and followed him towards the bridge. Then, one by one, they all crossed the bridge together. "What just happened?" asked the first animal. "That was a rescuer. The animals you saw bowing to the rescuer in respect were those who found new homes because of all their work. They will all cross over to the bridge when their new families arrive. Those you saw restored were those who never found homes. When a rescuer arrives, they are allowed to perform one final act of rescue. They are allowed to escort all those poor animals that they couldn't place on earth across the Rainbow Bridge."
Thanks for listening to Dogcast Radio, available from www.dogcastradio.com. That's dogcastradio.com. If you'd like to get in touch with us, and wherever you are in the world, we'd love to hear from you. You can do so in a variety of ways. By phone from the UK, you can contact us on 0121 288 0922. From the US, you can contact us on our American number, which is 315-849-2022. From any other country, you'll need your international exit code and then 44121-288-0922. You can contact us on Skype with the ident Dogcast Radio. That's all one word, Dogcast Radio. By email, you can contact me on julie@dogcastradio.com. When contacting us by email, if you have the facilities, please record your questions or comments and send them to us as an audio file. That way we can include them directly in our programme. We can accept most formats, for example, WAV, MP3. All these methods of contacting us can be found on our website, which is www.dogcastradio.com. And as ever, the final word goes to Jenny.
Why do dogs wag their tails? Because no one else can do it for them.